Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and the question of this hour will be, what is the purpose of mandatory public education? And we'll get to that in just one moment. It's our Winter Pledge Drive, membership drive, and I am here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener donations, as you probably know, the foundation of our budget, and that's why we're asking for your gift right now. You can make your pledge of support at WPR.org, or you can call us toll-free, 888-202-2552. Mike Crane is joining me right now, Acting Director and Chief Operating Officer for Wisconsin Public Radio. And Mike, welcome again. Tell us about our goal and all of that.
I'd like to thank everybody who pledged in the last hour. We fell a little bit short of the dollar goal, but every single dollar counts. So
yes,
thank you, everybody, for getting in. And we're looking forward to a fascinating conversation this hour. And, of course, listening every day to public radio is a non-compulsory public education, which happens every single day, and it's available to you, and you tune in. And we're asking you right now to help us to reach a $5,000 goal this hour. We're hoping it's going to be a big hour. It will be with your help. You can contribute $35, $60, $120.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some obvious numbers because that's $5 a month or $10 a month. But you could pledge a dollar a day. Whatever amount you choose, help us to get there to that $5,000 goal by making your pledge now online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And in just a moment, we'll be talking to John Gatto, who's the author of Weapons of Mass Instruction. There's a title for you, A School Teacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Schooling. I'm trained to be a teacher, and I did teach high school for a little while, many, many years ago. So we come from different perspectives. I'm one of those people who loved school. I don't know, did you love school? I loved school. I loved going to school.
I loved school, except the part about like term papers and things. I loved to learn.
Right.
But then having to prove that I'd learned was always a pain.
Yeah, I loved it. And so when you talk about this is not compulsory schooling, which is true, but it is as though it's school. It's the best of school for me. All these topics that are so interesting and we learn about it, and I feel like a teacher again in a way. So it's good.
Well, and the teachers I loved were the ones that allowed and encouraged the kind of debate that our listeners have with the guest every single day. And we're inviting you to help out and making sure that that's possible by giving to WPR to support the programs. Now, as an added incentive, we do have a gift, and that's the book that we're going to be talking about, John Gatto's book, Weapons of Mass Instruction. And we'll ask you to donate $150 or more if you're going to decide to take that as your thank you gift. But at any amount, help us to make sure we move along. And we've already had a $120 contribution.
Thank you.
So let's go, folks.
All right. We're moving along here. WPR is probably preset in your home or car. It certainly is in mine. And maybe it's preset in more than one room in your home. You listen, a lot of you listen from your comments all the time, which is great. You listen to WPR a lot, and it may be time to become a contributing member to us.
Yeah, maybe it's even on your public radio tuner that people are now putting on their iPhone. I've talked to a lot of people who are doing that. And you can help to pay for this service that you use on a regular basis by making a switch from just a listener to a listener and contributor. Do it securely online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And you decide the amount of your pledge. If you would like to give, and we hope you can, $150 or more, you're going to be receiving John Taylor Gatto's book, Weapons of Mass Instruction, A School Teacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Schooling. It's a very interesting historical perspective, too, on how we came about having mandatory schooling in this country. He taught for 30 years. He quit. He wrote an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal saying why he was quitting some years ago. So it's really, it's a lively conversation we're going to have. And I know you love talking about education. Weapons of Mass Instruction for a pledge of $150 or more. And pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Mike, very much.
Be back later.
Yeah. All right. And we're going to have a rip-roaring good conversation here with John Taylor Gatto, author of Weapons of Mass Instruction, A School Teacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Schooling. He's also the author of Dumbing Us Down. John was a school teacher for 30 years in public schools before resigning from school teaching, and he did so by writing a letter that appeared in the op-ed pages of the Wall Street Journal. This was during the year he was named New York State's official teacher of the year. The op-ed piece, Government Schooling is the Most Radical Adventure in History. It kills the family by monopolizing the best times of childhood and by teaching disrespect for home and parents. He said in 30 years of teaching kids rich and poor, he almost never met a learning disabled child, and he hardly ever met a gifted or talented child either. We're going to have a good conversation this hour. Our phone number for your on-air participation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Hello, John. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, John.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on. You know what, John? I loved school. Am I the only one? I loved going to school. Maybe it was the time I went. I had terrific teachers. They got me reading Shakespeare and helped me pick out college and determined my course and got me to see the world of migrant workers outside Chicago, and I just loved it. I guess a lot of people don't, huh?
Well, wouldn't it be strange if you took 3 million people, young and as probably as idealistic as they're ever going to be, and out of those 3 million, there was absolutely nobody who was inspiring. Of course we have armies of grand teachers and good people and decent people. They're embedded in a system which has different intentions than they do.
And what are the intentions? Why do we have mandatory schooling?
Well, it's the right question, but I'd like to enlarge it a little bit. How come through all of recorded human history, when we have streams of people calling for universal mass schooling, that nobody in the world was able to pull it off until the Prussian Germans in the early 19th century did it at bayonet point? What's going on exactly? If you went to a teacher's college, they'd tell you, well, there are laws in colonial New England demanding that you go to school. They're quite right. What they don't bother to tell you is nobody obeyed those laws for very long.
Bayonet point, you got to go back to that. What was happening there?
Well, the Prussians lost the Battle of Jena in 1806 to Napoleon, and the Prussian army was highly disciplined and the standard of the world, everyone thought. Napoleon's army was so ragtag that the individual unit commanders' wives designed the uniforms. So unlike the movies you see about those wars, actually it was like a crazy quilt going into battle, with each wife trying to outdo the other in the style and impact of the uniforms. When Napoleon wiped out the Prussian army at Jena, there was an emergency in Prussia, because that was their business, was renting out soldiers to the world. And what had happened, the Prussian philosopher Johann Fichte came up with the idea that it had happened because too many Germans thought for themselves and made their own decisions, and therefore an institution had to be imposed which would cause everyone to think alike and everyone to be obedient to laws, or as close as humanly possible. Based on Prussia's great success with that system, but it was a military success, students from all over the world, Horace Mann, people from Japan, they came to Prussia to see what was going on. And when they went back to their country, they called for the same prescription Prussia had. In Horace Mann's case, any of your listeners can verify what I'm saying by reading his seventh letter to the Boston School Committee, which will be in every library in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And he just falls on his knees and implores the Boston School Committee to bring Prussian schooling in, compulsory, removed from the community, disconnected from anything except learning how to obey orders.
And do you think that the mission now of most public schools in this country is to get young people to think alike and to obey orders, or has the mission changed?
Kathleen, the mission certainly changed philosophically, but in fact, schooling became, at the turn of the 20th century, schooling became the largest jobs project in the United States. So there's a momentum based on careers, based on familiar contracts. Were we to radically change any aspect of schooling, an awful lot of people would be economically hurt in the short run, in the intermediate run. So we sacrifice, what we've sacrificed as a nation is the breakaway imagination that we had only recently. I mean, by the 1930s, we were commanding 90% of all the patents on planet Earth. That's how inventive a people we were. But after World War II, when schooling actually settled in big time, for the first time, the number of patents secured by Americans began to drop steeply. It's still dropping. It's in the 20s now, which compared to other nations is creditable, but not compared to what we once were. Ringing bells in people's ears and submitting them to paper pencil tests, which frankly have no connection whatsoever with any kind of performance. We all know that. You and I don't know you, Kathleen, although I wish I did. I know that you have never asked anyone in a significant position to cut your hair, to mow your lawn, or to take your tonsils out, what their standardized test scores were, or what their grade point average was, because you know on some level, and everyone listening, in the same way, that the information is worthless. I'll tell you this, Harvard knows it. I had an interview with the Harvard admissions director about 3 years ago, and she said, we only accept people with a record of distinction, and test scores are not sufficient evidence of distinction. And of course that's true.
I don't think in the many years I've been in broadcasting, probably a handful of people have asked me where I went to college, if I went to college.
Of course not.
Right.
Of course not, because once again, the information yields up very little of value that you can predict Kathleen Dunn from or John Gatto or anyone else. It's this huge Alice in Wonderland why you're all a pack of cards. Thing, but it is an employment project, and that's what continued, I think, by momentum, the Prussian system.
Let's spend a little more time on this standardized test, because I'm sure this resonates with our many educators who listen to this program.
Sure.
There are many of them, and they complain vociferously about teaching to the test, about having to miss World War II in your history class because you got to prepare people for the standardized tests.
On some level, on many levels, some of them, but on some levels, everybody understands it's an enormous waste of time. I don't mean to castigate the teacher contingent, because I say there are a great many dedicated, intelligent people there, but they're trapped in a system that spends 10% of its time preparing for tests,
right.
Taking the tests, wringing your hands and reallocating your resources based on the test results, and the tests correlate with nothing. There have been over 100 major attempts to show that the tests have predictive value, and they don't, except in one area. It's very clear that if you do well on these tests, you'll do well on the next one and the next one.
You know
really
how to take tests.
In Wonderland, and it costs us about $50 billion
a
year,
that's a lot.
And 10% of our school time.
So why do we have them?
Well, once again, I'll give a simplistic answer, but from my simplistic answer, you can tease out all the other reasons. They're an immensely effective instrument of social control. I don't want to sound like a sociologist. The fear keeps most of the kids in line, and the ones that aren't kept in line by the fear eventually drop out by being marginalized. It's a tool of command. Now, I don't think teacher meetings sit around and talk about that, but we all know it. Certainly the worst teachers I've ever known have said to me, oh, thank God for the test. I don't have to work for a week or 2 weeks. And the first day I was hired, and I hope I'm struck dead right on this interview if I exaggerate, the first day I was hired, the union rep came around to my room. He said, I'm going to tell you this one time and one time only. And if you tell anyone else I said this, I'll just deny it and say you're a liar. He said, you give a test every Friday. You prepare for the test every Thursday. And Monday in class, you correct the test. He said, now you're working 2 days a week. Got it? And then he was like, I'm out of here. Well, suddenly I saw my whole school career as a student race in front of my eyes.
Let's welcome phone calls for John. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The book, as you can tell, really gets you thinking about this topic. I come from a different perspective in that, as I said earlier, I love school. I love going to school. I still love, if I could, I'd go to school all the time. But John says in his book that the schooling system in this country is intensely boring. It is subject-driven, while nothing in life is subject-driven. And then what's with this? Every 43 minutes, a little bell rings, and that's that. School isn't about intellectual development. It's about obedience. We'll talk more about that. And also, I think that this is something that deserves a few minutes of conversation. He almost never met a learning disabled child, hardly ever met a gifted and talented one either. We'll talk more about what he means by that. Our phone lines are filled. We are going to welcome your calls in a moment, 800-486-8655. We're also in a pledge drive, I should remind you. And if you'd like, it's our thank you gift to you this hour for a $150 pledge. We'll be happy to send you Weapons of Mass Instruction, written by our guest, John Taylor Gatto. And the number is 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Taylor Gatto, author of Weapons of Mass Instruction, A Schoolteacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Schooling, is our guest this hour. And let's go to Kurt from Spring Brook, our first caller. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, I'd like to just say that I admire John's work. It's really helped me a lot understand what schooling is about. I'd like to hear him talk about the role of schooling keeping kids off the job market in this industrial age, if he can.
Keeping them off the job market. Okay.
Hi, Kurt. The school and jobs have had an intimate connection since the beginnings of institutional schooling. The original purpose, now we're going back to 1890 to about 1914, about the First World War, the original purpose was to free up the maximum number of parents who could be put into the so-called workforce. So you held the kids off the labor market, where throughout human history, young people have been an integral part of the labor market. They're full of ideas. They're resourceful. They don't quit easily, and they recover from. But now they were to be reserved away from that. Now what we've got, Kurt, and this, I think, is a true national emergency. We have a nation that dominated the world's economies for a long time, not only by production, but by inventiveness. And by accelerating the schooling process, intensifying it, what we've done is to lose a great deal of our inventiveness. And that, I think, is what we're going to need to compete with the other nations in the world. They already figured out that schooling was a way to intensify the leadership focus, that if only a few people are allowed to say, do this, do that, you're a lot more efficient. You're not nearly as productive, but you're a lot more efficient. And China and India and Malaysia, a number of other nations, have outstripped our ability to school, partly because their family traditions lent themselves in that direction. But now what we've got is we're running this mill that worked when we were a large factory, huge commercial enterprise economy. We're not ever going to be that economy again. And look, I'll stop right now and hear your reaction, but the best evidence of that is our pathetic automobile industry, which once was the only automobile industry worth talking about on the entire planet. We had every advantage, all the distribution, all the reputation, and now we're known around the world as people who produce junk. It's handsome junk often, but it's junk.
Yeah. Let's go back to children for a moment, though, and then I'll go back to you, I promise, Kurt. It seems to me as though it might be better for young people to be in school rather than to be exploited as they were by the job market, which they were in the years that you're talking about. We had young kids who were working like slaves in the job market for almost nothing.
Well, obviously that's true. We have kids working like slaves right now for absolutely nothing and a false promise of a bright future. If you just at random, and do try this experiment, if at random you stopped a couple of college professors and a couple of high school teachers and you said, could you tell me why you're doing exactly the unit you're doing, you would get blank stares as if you were crazy. Well, you're doing it because it's going to be on the test. But if you pushed further, I taught at City University for 5 years. I could never get a straight answer out of anybody. They didn't know why they were doing what they were doing. In fact, it was discouraged to even ask questions like that.
Mm.
You can see me fumbling because I'm trying to say about six things at once. The idea that people would not do well if they didn't, for example, work hard and go to college is made ridiculous by the fact that not only did Bill Gates not go to college, his partner, Paul Allen, didn't go to college, Steve Jobs didn't go to college, his partner, Steve Wozniak, didn't go to college, Michael Dell didn't go to college, the guy who created the International News Service, CNN, Ted Turner, didn't go to college. I had gone for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Well, if you want me to, because none of us know how to deal with this information.
Kurt, did you have a response?
Well, yeah, I do. Just going on what John just said, and I listened to President Obama talk about how we need to increase funding of schools and stuff, I just cringe. I mean, what does John think about that? And then I'll get off.
All right, we'll get the answer to that in just one moment, increased funding for schools. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is our winter pledge drive right now, and your contribution makes our work possible. Easy to make your donation. You can go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Mike Crane is joining me in our studio, Acting Director and Chief Operating Officer for Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, Mike.
Hello. It's good to be here. And a fascinating conversation. I'm finding myself disagreeing in some cases with either the caller or with our guest. And that's exactly as it should be, that our conversation is stimulating on the Ideas Network, and you help to make it possible. We're working on a goal of $5,000 for this hour. We've raised $570, or more than 10% of that. So that's terrific. We need your help right now. The toll-free number to pledge is 888 202-2552, or you can pledge securely online at WPR.org.
And Wisconsin Public Radio, of course, covers international issues. We cover national issues, political issues extensively here from 9 to 11, state issues. How much do you learn about current events? You learn a whole lot. I know I do because of Wisconsin Public Radio. You hear all kinds of viewpoints from the experts, like the guest we're hearing today. It's a viewpoint you don't hear very often, but it's an interesting, compelling one. You also hear other viewpoints. Listeners bring a unique perspective, of course, in so many of our guests. Say you are just the best, and I don't say that just to flatter you. They really do believe you're the best, and I would agree with them. You are.
Yeah, it's in the previous hour we had the comment that this is something I would only bring up on public radio.
Right, exactly.
And that's because of the quality of the listeners as well. You know, you get substantial coverage of issues and not just rhetoric and not just argument, but actual discussion. If you hear yourself saying, yesterday on WPR, I heard that, well, then it's time to make a pledge. It's so easy to do. You can do it at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You give to Wisconsin Public Radio to support all of our programs as an added incentive. We have a special thank you gift this hour. If you donate $150 or more, you can receive John Taylor Gatto's book, Weapons of Mass Instruction, and carry on this conversation we're having past this hour. It's a school teacher's journey through the dark world of compulsory schooling. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Have you been listening without pledging? It's okay. We know that it takes a while. Earlier today, I heard Cheryl Gasser talking about a friend of hers who'd taken 10 years before they made the decision. And we hope it won't be 10 years for you, but we hope that you will get to the phone and make that call. Pledge $5 a month, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe try a membership. Ask for the $35 pledge at WPR.org or give the $35 pledge at WPR.org, and we can send you a special thank you gift of the reusable bag from WPR. Or call us toll free and give whatever amount you think is right at 888-202-2552.
As you know, I'm a former school teacher, and I love programs about education and have been, you know, strong supporter of schooling and learning, and that's what we do here on the station as well. So it's fun to have these kinds of conversations. We had Micah, caller pleasure from Ripon, saying I can't read the name, a student, and planned on giving to WPR once I actually started earning money. That may be a long time off now that I'm in grad school, since Wisconsin Public Radio is such a valued part of my daily routine. I think I should start giving back now. So whatever you can give, that's what we do. And thanks so much for your pledge. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
We're working on that goal, and we're still about 90% of the way to go.
Yeah, we have a ways to go, everybody.
Yeah.
So call. Give us a call. Pledge.
$4,400 needed, and that can be your contribution of any amount. $5, $500, $1,000. WPR counts on you, so please get in touch, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Mike. Our guest is the author of Weapons of Mass Instruction, A School Teacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Schooling. John Taylor Gatto is our guest. Our last caller, John, wanted to know what you thought about the president saying that we needed to give more money to schools. He even introduced, sitting next to his wife, a young girl from a school in South Carolina. He had mentioned during the campaign trail the school was in horrible shape, the roof was leaking, and she had written a letter to members of Congress saying that they weren't going to quit, they weren't going to give up, and they needed more money for education. The caller said that made him cringe. Did that make you cringe?
It makes me cringe, too.
It makes you cringe?
I like the guy very, very much. The education is virtually free. It's setting your head the right way on the right goals, and it almost costs nothing. As history has demonstrated, they're superbly educated people who don't spend anything on it. Schooling is quite expensive. It's an obstacle to education because what it does is substitute groupthink for individual self-pressure, self-pushing yourself to be your best. It stops you from utilizing feedback. In fact, it stops the classroom teacher, it stops the principal, the superintendent. Nobody in the system is allowed to use feedback and make significant decisions based on the data they're taking in, because the orders come centrally. They don't even come from state departments of education. They come centrally from a handful of foundations and a handful of universities, and two congressional investigations have come to the exact same conclusion. The marching orders for American schooling are coming out of a tiny handful of private foundations and a tiny handful of universities, and then they pass down through various political divisions until they reach the superintendency. Those people aren't allowed to make decisions, minor decisions, cosmetic stuff. So I cringe, but I don't think that's Obama's best thinking. He went to a very, very elite private school, a school I happen to know Honolulu or outside of Honolulu, and it's a school that turns over the major responsibility for education to the student, which is what has to happen. Oh, Kathleen, I studied for years what the elite private boarding schools in this country did. I mean, the Choates and the Hills and the Exeters and the Grottons and St. Paul's. And it was a world of difference. They train their students in the time-honored principles of leadership, which requires self-mastery. And the best public schools train their students to be employees, to get a good job, that's in quotation marks, as if those are ever going to exist again.
Mm-hmm. And you've had experience at both private schools and public schools. You grew up in private and public, right?
I did. I was trained in a Jesuit boarding school in third grade, and I swear to you, I didn't have to open a math book until high school again. I mean, we were on algebra in third grade, and the truth is, everybody came up to speed in it, so I'm not patting myself in the back. What we've done is artificially extend childhood for about a century for a whole lot of reasons. Let me pick one, though, that most people don't think of. It creates a mass of well-articulated jobs and professions so that it solves one problem of political leadership, which is keeping your population busy. Let me just conclude this by telling Kurt, there are a couple of small, inexpensive corrections that could be made even in public schooling that would cause a kind of collective gasp at the good things that were happening in the country. One of them is to discontinue the idea that school is about consuming the opinions of other people primarily. What if you said it's about producing new knowledge on every level? I can guarantee you that's why I won, you know, this closet full of awards as a teacher. Nobody who gave me the awards knew what I was doing. And what I was essentially doing was saying, you're not getting out of this class without producing something that adds value to the world. And I don't mean in an abstract sense.
Yeah, so what did they produce? What was new?
Well, would you like to know a couple of things they did?
Sure.
Okay. The most recent is a teenage girl found a disconnect between the dwindling schools of red snapper that are being reported with great sadness by fishermen and conservatories, and the fact that red snapper seem to be in tremendous abundance in the prosperous sections of Manhattan where I live. So she took 42 samples, small samples of red snapper tissue. She sent it to a DNA lab, and they reported back that 8 out of 10 fish sold as red snapper, very expensive, were actually redfish, very cheap. Okay, that's producing new knowledge.
Yeah.
Here's another one. A black kid came to me. This is the famous election where Ed Koch, who's sort of a national figure and was mayor of New York three consecutive times, was running against an unknown black candidate or a little-known black candidate named Dave Dinkins. And the New York Times said 3 weeks before the election that Dinkins was behind by 17 points. That's a landslide in anybody's book. And this black kid was angry and disconsolate. He came to me and said, why is there so much prejudice? And I said, why do you believe this story on the front page of the New York Times? Look, it says they only talked to 300 people. Tell you what, I said, we're going to let my classes out for 2 days. Each one of you is going to, so I had 120 kids. Each mm-hmm. one of you is going to talk to 30 people, and we're going to produce a sample 20 times as large as the New York Times, and the statistics to process that raw data, any fifth grader could master, and this was an eighth grade. So when we processed our thousands of responses, we said, our data said Dinkins was going to win by less than a point, and P.S., Dinkins won by less than a point. Can you imagine if 65 million trapped school children were taught simple statistics and they were able to test all these big shot opinions that journalism produces based on sampling? Except they'd be able to learn a whole lot of things other than the mathematics of sampling, how to approach a whole variety of strangers, how to speak in such a way that you don't frighten or alarm people. I mean, there's a ton of stuff you can produce. About 20 years ago, and you'll know this, and most of your readers will, some teacher down in a hillbilly community in Georgia, Raboon Gap, decided to make his students producers. So he sent these people out on a 30-mile radius, on bicycles, on foot, to interview all the old people in Raboon Gap and its outlying suburbs. I'm being sarcastic there. And what came out of that was a series of books called the Foxfire Books, still in print, sure, that have earned over $20 million in royalties for the little hillbilly school in Raboon Gap. Once you set your mind to thinking, well, how could these kids be used to produce? Ask them what they could do that's productive. Ask their parents.
John Taylor Gatto is our guest. His book is Weapons of Mass Instruction, A Schoolteacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Schooling. And we'll take more phone calls for him in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we return to phone calls for John. Let's go to Jenny from Madison next. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Kathleen. I really want to thank you for having John on. John is really an icon in this area of social critique. He really puts together the history and puts solid scholarship behind all these arguments that you're saying. I think when you made the comment earlier in the conversation that you think these are odd views or views that are not heard more, they need to be heard more.
I never said they were odd views. I don't think they're odd views.
Well, I mean, that they're somehow not in the mainstream. I mean, I think they need to be put in the mainstream, because if most people really started to question the bill of goods that education sells, we'd be in a lot different position. But I want to say a couple of things. Firstly, earlier in the conversation, you made the comment to John that, you know, you love school and that you, you know, you couldn't imagine not going to school. And you know, I hear that. I'm an unschooler. My son has never been to school. He's never followed any kind of package curriculum. Everything that he learns is real and directly related to him. And I just want to challenge you on that comment, because I think the reason you can't imagine it is because you've never had the chance to imagine it. No one has imagined what the world would look like if we didn't have this behemoth educational system. I think if you want to fund an institution, the one thing that makes this country so incredibly unique and wonderful is our public library system. And all you have to do, we're blessed in Wisconsin to have probably one of the top public library systems in the country. If you want to fund an institution that's aimed at really promoting learning, not schooling, these are two different terms that need to be separated from each other, learning, people producing and using information and learning how to do that, you need to properly fund our public libraries. Public libraries should become centers where people can get resources to follow their own pursuits in a real way, not in a way that's directed by somebody else.
Okay, let's get a response.
Well, I'm just in love with what Jenny says. Of course, public libraries are where it's at. The kids that I encountered over 30 years schooling, as soon as they got a little bit of faith in themselves back, which I think the exercise I walked them through did, were perfectly able to teach themselves, I mean straight through, let me exaggerate a little bit, nuclear physics. They work so much harder, more intensely than you could legally ask them to work. They don't quit every 42 minutes when a bell rings. I'll give you what ought to bowl you over. Jenny, you'll love this if you don't know it. I'll give you two unschoolers who created the top scientific project on planet Earth today, the Human Genome Project, is the product of Francis Collins, an unschooler from a sheep ranch in the western part of Virginia, who told the New York Times 5 years ago, if the authorities had found out how my mother was homeschooling us, they would have thrown her in jail and us into social service, because they didn't follow any pattern whatsoever. Whatever the four brothers agreed on, they did for as long as the four brothers remained in agreement. The other guys, Craig Venter, these are the two co-creators of Human Genome. Venter only graduated from high school because his school hated him so much, he was such a troublemaker, never came to class, that they raised his F's to D's so they could get rid of him. He then was shipped off to Vietnam as a buck private in the medical corps. And through his experience there, in that forge of character that battle often is, Venter shaped his own life, began to work on this idea. And then he and Collins eventually were forced together politically because they're much different characters. Francis Collins is a born-again Christian, which makes the scientific world very, very uneasy. And Venter is probably, the world's leading pagan, to be slightly humorous about it. In any case, both of them are unschoolers. So much for the people who say, well, this might work for poets and playwrights, but not for scientists. Sorry.
All right. We need to pledge for a while. John, thank you so much for being with us. It was really it was a good hour.
I let me give you a compliment, Kathleen.
Sure, John.
Wisconsin Public Radio and Pittsburgh Public Radio are the two best in the country, far and away. You guys are the standard. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, John. Thanks very much. John Taylor Gatto, our guest. John's book is Weapons of Mass Instruction, A School Teacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Education. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution, of course, making our work here at WPR possible. Go online, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552. I'm joined by Mike Crane, who is our acting director and chief operating officer for Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, there was an hour. Some ideas you don't hear very often.
I love a robust exchange of ideas. It actually feels very much like the family I grew up in.
Right.
We took the gloves off whenever we were having a conversation, and I really enjoyed that. We are having an okay hour fundraising-wise, so I'm going to ask you to turn your minds from that great conversation to making a pledge of support right now, because we still have $3,900 to go to reach our $5,000 goal for the hour. You can have John's book for a pledge of $150 if you'd like, and that'd be a great thing. Or just make the pledge if you don't want the book. That's still great. It's easy to get in touch with us. It's WPR.org. Just click Donate Now when you get there, or toll free, 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has a reputation. You heard John make reference to that. He singled out Wisconsin Public Radio and Pittsburgh Radio, Public Radio. Reputation for quality and substance, and I think marvelous guests. We have really marvelous guests with you day to day to day. And your contributions in the past have gotten us up to this point. Your pledge today will take this kind of strength into the future. Your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio helps us keep quality and substance and new ideas. We're the Ideas Network. What could be more of a new old idea than what you just heard? Pledge your support securely at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So why should you give to WPR? It's actually very simple. It supports the programs.
Mm-hmm.
However, as an added incentive, if you'd like to do a good deed and help, we do have a special thank you gift and for a little while longer, and that is the book that John Taylor Gatto was talking about. It's a $150 donation that we'd ask for if you'd make that to get Weapons of Mass Instruction, A Schoolteacher's Journey Through the Dark World of Compulsory Schooling. You can give now at WPR.org or contact us at 888-202-2552. It's so easy to make that pledge. You know, we've been hearing people getting in touch. They've been telling us, sending us notes like, I really count on hearing Kathleen's show. I don't know what I'd do without Wisconsin Public Radio. These are the kinds of comments that tell us that you value Wisconsin Public Radio. So we invite you to call right now with your pledge of support. Help us to reach that $5,000 goal, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers from Car Talk.
Here with a little help with a donationally challenge.
Right. We used to call you cheapskates, but the people at NPR told us we shouldn't do that anymore.
Anyway, we've been studying the excuses that people give for not pledging money to the station.
Believe it or not, a lot of people say they just don't know how much to give. You know, how much is appropriate?
So we've come up with a simple formula to help you figure out how much to pledge.
Well, I'm ready. How's it work?
Well, my brother's going to do the calculation.
Go ahead. Tell me what to do.
You ready?
Yeah.
First, take the current mileage of your car. Now, if you have two cars... Add them together and divide by 1.8.
Got it.
Now add up the total number of radios you have in your household.
Yeah.
And divide that by the number of people living there.
I got that. Yeah.
Okay, now take Avogadro's number and divide it by your IQ.
You can't divide by zero.
Forget that step. Now add all the numbers together. What pledge amount do you get
to? Equals 54,836.
I think you're doctor off my formula.
Listen, the bottom line is that it doesn't matter how much you pledge. Every dollar makes a difference.
I'm going to go back to the drawing board, I think. But in the meantime, here are some folks who can give you some real pledging advice.
And that's you, Mike.
Yes, the advice is make a pledge right now and do it in any amount that you think is right. Some people that are listening today have given $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Others have given $5. And everywhere in between, what matters is your participation in this daily informal education that you get on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our goal is $5,000 for the hour, about 4 minutes left, and still $3,900 to raise. We hope that this is your turn, because we do count on you. Please call right now, and that is 888-202-2552, or contribute online at WPR.org.
It's true, we count on you. We count on you for your donation. We count on you for your smart contributions to this program day after day. You're a marvelous audience. You are challenging, and you know your history, and everybody says that about you. Our guests say that about you all the time. So please call with your pledge of support. Let us know that you like conversations about education and politics and the arts and you name it. We have it day after day after day. $150 and you can receive Weapons of Mass Instruction. You may have taken issue with what our guest said. You may have wildly supported his ideas, but I guarantee you that it will add to your spirited dinner table conversation tonight and in the weeks ahead. WPR.org, WPR.org, or 888 888-202-2552.
One of the callers that was on the line hoping to get in on the conversation said that he feels you should make a contribution to WPR because you would not hear the kind of conversation that we had in this last hour anywhere
right.
else.
That's true.
And
true.
And so that it really is a terrific reason, and we invite you to go ahead and make that call. Join people like Judith from Waukesha, who contacted us a little while ago, Steve and Rita from Monona, and a whole bunch of people that have been in touch already. $3,700 to go to reach our goal for this hour. We can do that with a couple of big contributions
right.
or a bunch of small ones.
Mm-hmm.
So please get in touch, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think that one of the reasons we choose the jobs that we do, if we're lucky enough to be able to choose them, is to find something that makes our life more meaningful. It's certainly why I do what I do here. I think this is a meaningful service. And you'll find that Wisconsin Public Radio is a pretty meaningful radio station. We give you so much to contribute to the world and your understanding of politics, and it also entertains you. We have humor every now and then, storytelling. Please make your pledge now to keep all of that on the radio dial. It is so unique, and, you know, I hate to use a lawyer word here, but it is a precious radio service. It just is. So call with your pledge, please, 888-202-2552.
You know, with the news these days about what we're finding is going on with media companies throughout the world, you know, that the New York Times could possibly go under.
I know.
Amazing. Right. This is a precious resource. Your calls and pledges protect it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Mike, and thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges here on the Ideas Network.